Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Mal Leary and Steve Missler. The House Judiciary Committee has sent two articles of impeachment to the full House for a vote, perhaps by next Wednesday. For two of the Mainers, that vote and what's likely to follow will be fraught with significance. I'm talking, of course, about Democrat 2nd District Congressman Jared Golden and Republican Senator Susan Collins. Both are likely to be in tight races for re-election next year. Steve Missler, it seems ironic. The tough choice for Democrat Golden is whether to challenge President Trump, while for Republican Collins, it's whether to support him.
Yeah, and I also kind of wonder if these two articles of impeachment present an exit strategy for both of them from a very perilous situation, I think. Now, to reiterate, the two articles that are coming out of the Judiciary Committee, one is alleging the president committed an abuse of power. The other one is obstruction of Congress and its ability to investigate that abuse of power. So I wonder if that poses potentially an exit strategy for either Collins or Golden. He could basically vote for potentially, I don't know, maybe not going all the way to say that the president obstructed or that he abused his power, but that he obstructed Congress. Maybe there's an out there for him. I don't know. Same with Collins, because she could make the argument that, oh, well, you know, the president really should be complying with this investigation, because it might even exonerate him if he were to turn over documents and witnesses that his administration denied. I really don't know the answer here. I don't know if this is pure speculation, but there is some speculation out there that maybe Collins would be able to split the baby on this. And I do wonder if that's an opportunity for Golden as well.
And there's the timing question, Erwin, because the benefit to Collins comes really on the timing of the trial. If it's a quick, swift trial and she votes to remove him from office, she's going to face a challenger in the primary. There will be a Trump-supported challenger in the primary. We don't know who that person is, but we know there will be one. There's a lot of discussion among Republican circles in that basis. So that's a timing issue that we have no idea what's going to happen that could benefit her or not benefit her. As for our two representatives, I spoke with both Golden and Shelley Pingree this week. Golden is clearly not decided. He wanted to read transcripts and look at things before he actually casts his vote. Shelley Pingree, on the other hand, says that she's almost positive she's going to vote to impeach. She'd have to see something come out in these last in the actual wording of the two resolutions that would change her mind, and I don't think anything is in those resolutions that will change her mind. So as far as our House delegation goes, it's split. One for impeachment, one unsure.
Yeah, and I would just add real quick that what we've heard so far, the most recent reporting that I've seen anyway, is that Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, seems to be leaning towards an expeditious trial. Let's get this over with, not really call that many witnesses. This is kind of counter to what the White House wants. They want a really messy trial where, you know, the Senate is calling in Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and whoever else they could come up with in their range of defenses for the president, which by my count, or actually it was the Washington Post that put it out, was over two dozen defenses of the president. And they've all been sort of, evolving over time is probably the best way to put it. But I do wonder, you know, to Mal's point, I think the closer that window gets between the filing deadline for a primary nomination papers and the trial itself in the Senate, like the more that window narrows, the better it is for Collins. But I don't know that that's going to, you know, it's going to shape up that way. The way it's going now, it looks like they want to get this thing over with and quickly. And that would not necessarily benefit her one way or the other, but it might shape how she ends up voting on these two articles.
You know, I'm just curious at this point, Mal, you were mentioning before the possibility of a right wing challenge to Collins if she votes the wrong way in the Senate. What would be required actually to get someone on the Senate ballot for the primary, which would be coming up about 6 months from now?
Same as anybody else, that by March, middle of March, they would have to file the petitions of 2,000 signatures, and that would put them on the ballot. So that's why I'm saying that window is crucial, because we are still talking in February some pretty nasty weather at times. And, you know, they're going to have to go out and get registered Republicans and get those done and get them done quickly. So if the trial goes on a long time, like some folks would like, including some in the White House, then I think it becomes less likely that you'll be a challenger. But if this is quick and she votes for one or either or both, then you end up with, I think, a situation where she's going to face a primary.
Yeah, and that 2,000 signatures, Mal, you've been around a long time. That's not a really high bar, is it?
It's not that high a bar, but again, it's the timing and the time of the year that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, if this trial goes into late February and you got 2 weeks in March, it's more problematical than if the trial only lasts a couple weeks in January.
Well, another major item that Mainers are likely to vote on next year is the big power line project Central Maine Power wants to build in the Western Woods. Now, we have to point out there is, as yet, no referendum plan, but opponents are gathering signatures for one. And Mal, kind of the same question I just asked, what are the chances in this particular instance that the opponents will be able to gather enough signatures to force a vote on this?
Well, they've been collecting signatures for a few weeks now, including the special election that we had. So they had a little bit of opportunity to gather signatures. And you got to look at the grassroots here. I mean, you've got some big votes in those towns along the corridor path against it. And if they just focus on some of these informational meetings that have been held, I think that they will be able to get those signatures. The actual number is around 63,000 and change. Most people that run these initiatives try to get closer to 80 because there are problems with people putting the wrong signature down. They leave out a middle initial. They get the town wrong. The certification is not done. So they need to have this cushion. So their target's much larger than the actual number that's needed. I think they're working on it. And let's face it, when you've got some grassroots support on something like this, it moves much more differently than other citizen initiatives.
Mm. Yeah, and to Mal's point, I think the other thing, too, is that the people who are supporters of this project are obviously anticipating that these grassroots opposition people are going to meet that bar, that 63,000 plus signatures. I think, you know, they're acting as if that's inevitable. And, you know, they're running ads. CMP-related groups are running ads. And I expect we'll see a lot more of that, too.
Yeah. And, Steve, this may also trigger another argument over foreign influence in a domestic U.S. election. Explain that.
Yeah. So Hydro-Québec, which is the generator of this energy that would be coming down the corridor, they formed a ballot question committee. We had a story about this earlier this week. And they have a lot of money. They've generated over $400 billion in revenue in their last annual report. And so they have a lot of money at their disposal. The question that we attempted to answer this week is whether or not they're legally allowed to even participate in an election in Maine. And it appears as though that's the case, because there's no prohibition on donations from foreign entities in Maine law, and federal law defines an election as a candidate campaign. So while federal law expressly prohibits influence from foreign agents or foreign corporations, which is the case here, they do not bar that participation in referenda. So it'll be interesting to see what their advertising campaign looks like, because I think this project already has a from away problem. And that is because, as we all know, and you know, every time we talk about this power line delivering power to Massachusetts customers, we get pushback from supporters of the project, because they're saying, oh, no, this power goes into the grid and it gets spread around and everybody uses it. That may be true, but this project would not happen if Massachusetts did not have a set of renewable energy goals, which this project is designed to satisfy. So we will see. You already got the Massachusetts problem. Now you have a Quebec problem. I'm curious to see whether Hydro-Québec's involvement, and we'll have to see what that looks like, helps or hurts more than it helps.
What makes this even more difficult to try to ascertain is the fact that Hydro-Québec is owned wholly by the province of Quebec, mm-hmm. which is a government entity. Mm-hmm. And that's where you start getting into a question as to whether a foreign government can influence an election and what an election definition is under that part of the federal law. So there's a lot of stuff swirling out there where this private corporation really isn't a private corporation. It's a public corporation that is totally controlled by the province of Quebec.
Yeah, and to Mal's point, I think that's why when I spoke with government officials from Quebec this week for the story that I did, they were very, very careful about making a distinction between Hydro-Quebec, the corporation, and the government of Quebec. They were really trying to steer clear of any association or any advocacy on behalf of a company that provides them billions of dollars of dividends every single year. And the fact is that this project is a major export project for Hydro-Quebec, and they've already had unprecedented exports to the United States. And because their interests and the governments are so intertwined financially, it's hard to figure out where Hydro-Quebec's advocacy ends and the government's begins, if at all. But that's something that people will be watching very closely.
Well, the political fight over this power line project has apparently created the proverbial strange bedfellows. Governor Mills, a Democrat, has said she's going to support the project. And now former Republican Governor LePage has as well. I mean, Steve, what does LePage like about this project and why does he care at this point?
Well, the latter part of your question, I can't answer definitively. Why does he care? I don't know. But he has seemed to take an interest in this project. I mean, if you recall when there were bills in the legislature going through and that bills that would have potentially delayed or even, you know, scuttled this project altogether, there were rumors that LePage was calling Republican lawmakers and he was basically lobbying them to not vote for those bills. I've had that confirmed on background through various supporters of the project. They said that the former governor was not being paid to do this, but that he was somehow very interested in this particular project for one reason or another. The other day, though, he really doubled down on it. He went on his Facebook page and wrote a very carefully worded statement expressing support, saying that the project will lower electricity prices, a bunch of other assorted claims that are debatable, by the way. But what was interesting, too, is that normally when you read Governor LePage's Facebook page and posts there, people are generally very supportive of him, almost genuflecting in their sort of adulation for whatever it is that he has to say. That was not the case this time. Mm-hmm. He was roundly criticized by commenters on that page. And these are people who would also qualify their criticism as saying, I loved you as governor, but you're wrong on this. So it's interesting. I don't know if he has any involvement with any of the actual supporters of this project, whether it's CMP, Hydro-Quebec, whoever. I don't know that. And I'm not trying to insinuate that either. But it is interesting because there has been polling circulated where they were presumably commissioned by CMP or one of their affiliates, where they were message testing various parts of this corridor. But they were also message testing Governor LePage. This kind of makes you wonder if they see him as a potential advocate that they could use on the campaign trail.
Well, next year is also going to be a legislative election year. Mal, what's up on that front these days? And what are the stakes in this now for Governor Mills?
Well, the stakes are pretty high for Governor Mills. She wants to maintain Democratic majorities in the House and Senate to push her agenda, particularly her economic agenda that she just announced this week, which is very aggressive. And no one's put a price tag on it because I think they're afraid to put a price tag on it because the parts of it are so expensive when you look at similar projects in other states. What we're seeing is a very concerted effort, first, to recruit legislative candidates. There have been schools held by both the Democrats and Republicans. We're starting to see press releases about people running for various state Senate and state House seats now, which is kind of unusual because they can't even pick up the petitions to circulate until January 1st. So there is a lot of effort out there by both parties to recruit candidates and get them to run. Layered on all of this is also a massive effort to try to convince young voters to vote. We've got a group called the Progressive Turnout Project that is pledging over $2 million in Maine to turn out young voters. And they're talking about having field organizers going door to door using various computer analysis to focus in on where a young person lives and how they might be convinced to go out and vote. The whole effort here, defeat Donald Trump, defeat Susan Collins, and elect Democrats.
Yeah, and what's interesting, too, about this is if you step back even further, it's just further underscores a point I think we've made on this segment a number of times, which is that there is increasing focus on from both political parties and gaining power in state legislatures and in governor's offices. And, you know, I think that this is really just representative of that. The fact that they're out there so early before even you can take out papers to run for legislative office, as Mal just pointed out, is indicative of that fight sort of escalating. I think we're going to see more of that. I think we'll see Republicans trying to match these efforts in some way or another. And it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top.
All right. Mal, Steve, thanks you both very much.
Thank you.
Steve Missler and Mal Leary there. I'm Erwin Gratz. A reminder, Maine's Political Pulse is updated weekly on Friday afternoons at our website, mainepublic.org. You can hear long excerpts from The Pulse on Sunday's weekend edition and a shorter excerpt on Monday's morning edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is usually our producer. He has the week off. Music by Rob Holt. Thanks for joining us.